night gathers, and now my rewatch begins.
Welcome back to Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, the number one Game of Thrones podcast in the realm for people who party like Tyrion and slay like Daenerys, brought to you by Grand X Media. I'm Ross Bolin here at the brand new home of Grand X Media in Austin, Texas, with Barry Dudley.
Coming at you live and direct from the conference room.
Yeah, the podcast room is still being worked on, so we're temporarily relocated to the conference room. You know how it is. This is a special episode of Oysters, Clams, and Cockles revolving entirely around hotline calls from you, our loyal listeners, also known as the Clam Fam, among other things. The night's rewatch will resume, as always, next episode on Monday, covering the penultimate episode of Season 3, The Reigns of Castamere. So, emotionally prepare yourself for that. 866-43-CLAMS is our hotline number. You can call us with questions, takes, theories, whatever you want, whenever you want. We're going to bang through as many as we can in this episode. So let's get into these calls. Here's the first one.
Hey, what's up? It's Dale in Massachusetts. Loving the pop culture references, but a little upset these guys missed out that original Dario is Ajax from Deadpool, the villain. Just wanted to drop that in there, see if anyone else picked it up. Thanks, guys. Love the pod.
Dude, I saw Deadpool and loved it and did not pick this up at all, and I'm a little ashamed of myself.
I also saw Deadpool. I have to look this up right now on my phone.
I looked it up because obviously I screened these calls.
Because looking it up is good for radio.
It is good for radio. Yeah, everybody loves to listen to you looking something up on your phone.
Yes, yes. So give me 3, 2, okay, here
we go. You're doing it.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He's got no hair. He's bald, or he's shaved hair.
Well, as pop culture goes, then we should also address why he left Game of Thrones, why they had to recast him.
Let's do it.
It's because he got a movie role that he chose to take instead of continuing on as in Game of Thrones.
I got to call that a mistake on his part, unless that movie was Deadpool, in which case
probably a massive mistake, because it was not for the villain role in Deadpool. Ooh. It was to replace Jason Statham as the Transporter.
Wow.
In like a Transporter 4 or whatever,
okay,
which was, you know.
It was probably Transporter 7 or 8. Because I think Jason Statham did like 5, but it had to have been an amount of money he just couldn't walk away from, because the Transporter franchise has a lot of money. I mean,
yeah,
I just, you know,
yeah.
Or he's an idiot, one of the two. I guess it's entirely possible that he's just not very smart. But you don't walk away from a role on Game of Thrones.
You know, he probably had that classic attitude where he's like, well, this is TV, and I'm having I have a chance to go be in a movie.
Which is just not the attitude to have anymore.
No.
Yeah.
No. I was watching, there's a 30 Rock episode near the end of season 5 that I just finished, where like they do this whole kind of meta bit where Jack Donaghy is telling Tracy that if he wants to lose all of the respect that he's just gained from winning an Oscar,
yeah,
all he has to do is go do TV again, because nobody respects TV actors.
Right, yeah.
So it's like, and that's not really, it doesn't really hold anymore.
Not anymore, no.
You
I
know,
mean,
like
it very
that,
much did when we were kids, though, like in the
yes,
90s and
yes.
shit. That was the case.
Well, and I mean, even as many as 10 years ago, it's like when the Renaissance kind of started, and some of these big movie stars did come to TV.
Right.
It was kind of like a, oh my God, what are these guys doing moment.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Like very, you know.
Because back in the day, when you'd see a big time movie star on TV, with the exception of what's his name on, what was the hospital show that featured the most handsome man on earth?
ER?
Yeah.
George Clooney?
Yeah.
Yeah. But Clooney, that was a springboard for Clooney, you know?
Like, yeah, okay.
And then he never went back to do TV again.
But when you'd see a major, I guess that doesn't really apply here, but when you see a major actor, when you would see a major actor on a TV show, you'd be like, ooh, things must not be going very
right,
well.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, next call.
Hello, Clam Fam. This is Annalise calling from Rochester. Couple things. First of all, love you, Ross and Barrett, but when the fuck is Veronica coming back? A couple of theories for you, things to keep your eyes peeled for. One, I think we have a lot to learn from the Hound. I think that he's been seeing shit in the flames since he was young. I think that maybe he even saw something in the flames that made the mountain push his head in the fire. Because, as we know, He says, in the dragon pit, doesn't matter. You've known who's coming for you. You've always known. And he is kind of paralyzed by fire. It's not like he runs away from it. So I think that could be something. I also think that that Gendry is the legitimate heir of Cersei and Robert. He tells Ned in season one that he never knew his mother, but she had yellow hair. And as we know, the only redeeming quality of Cersei is that she loves her children. And I don't think she would want to have a child and raise a child with Robert, but I also don't see her being able to kill her child. So I think that would throw in a really interesting power dynamic between the heir of the Mad King and the heir of the usurper. And finally, I think that Dario Naharis is going to be traveling back to Westeros with the Golden Company. In what capacity, I don't know, but I think that that would be a cool way to reintroduce him and to, yeah, tie everything together. So, yep, love the show. Been a long-time listener. Thank you for loving the story as much as I do. Bye.
Thank you for the call. We'll go one by one here. First okay. thing, she forgot to hang up, so it's just going to like make a weird noise for a second. But Veronica is obviously not coming back for full-time purposes. Now, I can't say whether or not maybe she would come back and do a guest appearance. I had coffee with her the other day. She's doing great, by the way. And that's a possibility.
Okay.
It could happen. The Hound.
That's huge. Look out for that.
Yeah. The Hound and the whole who's coming for you thing, we've addressed this a few times. And look, nobody knows what he meant by that. I mean, I'm not going to say definitively what I think it is or isn't, because I really don't like have a strong theory here.
I mean, every point she made here is like good and probably has a strong possibility of going down. I would say,
fair enough.
The Hound is actually maybe the one that is the biggest reach,
right?
But just because you know, we had that scene where he like did see something in the fire,
yeah.
When he's with the Brotherhood, and it feels like that's the first time that he's ever seen something meaningful or vision like in a flame.
I'm 100% in on it. That was the first time.
Now maybe, you know, maybe if you want to keep like tying strings together, then the fact that he is so scared of fire and that's like his biggest weakness will tie in, you know, it's just like a nice little tie in to that he's now a believer in a fire god basically or something like that. You
do
know what
we,
I mean?
Do we get a moment with the Hound in season 8 where he has to overcome his fear of fire by wielding it in some way, or like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's gonna be one of those moments,
yeah,
where it's like this guy facing his fear.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, the Hound is definitely he's here to play. He's here. He's in the game.
Yeah, out of characters who, I mean, I guess there's no real comparison other than Jon, who we thought were gone and then they come back because mm-hmm. we thought the Hound might be dead,
right,
maybe
right.
You know, whatever. When he's left on that cliffside by Arya. I would have been more disappointed to lose him than Jon. Like, he's such a good character, and he's gotten so much more dynamic even since mm-hmm. coming back and kind of becoming a good guy and whatnot. So, I don't know. I just love his arc.
And then what do we got? We got Gendry possibly being the son of the true heir.
Yeah, to Cersei and Robert.
Okay.
The line about he never, you know, didn't know his mother, but mm-hmm. she had yellow hair
mm-hmm.
seems too specific,
sure,
and makes too much sense
uh-huh.
to just be nothing, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'd never really thought about it like that before, but
I also don't see how that plays out, though.
I don't know either.
You know,
like how they would reveal that, or have,
or why it would even matter. I guess.
Well, the only reason it would matter would be for the dynamic of Jon and Gendry both being rightful heirs to the throne in their own eyes, or whatever.
Okay.
Because that would legitimize
him. Yeah, but see, I don't
him.
See a Jon and Gendry like showdown. That just doesn't...
That'd be so weird.
That just would be weird.
It wouldn't work.
The only way that I can see it coming into play is if it somehow like freezes Cersei in some way.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like if she learns that this is the boy that...
Well, wouldn't she have to know like that she had another kid and that... I mean, it just seems unlikely.
Yeah, yeah.
As far as Dario Naharis goes, as of like yesterday, we have confirmed that he will be in season 8.
Okay.
We retweeted or tweeted or somewhere on our Twitter account, twitter.com/clamsandcockles. His IMDb page features him in season 8. So,
well, this makes sense because as we've talked about numerous times, we're still kind of waiting for Daenerys to be betrayed a third time, we think.
Yeah, and I mean, I still am not real... Dude, here's the thing that makes it so hard is that we know how many episodes are in season 8. How will they have time to throw in the Golden Company and Dario Naharis?
Dude,
and
the biggest thing that I'm looking forward to, like more than any other reveal, is the length of... like they usually will release the like how long the first one's going to be.
The minute count.
At least. And I mean... anything less than 80 minutes is a disappointment.
Per episode.
Yeah.
Like, minimum.
These episodes need to be long.
Well, we've been told they're going to be feature film length.
They need to be.
But that also isn't telling.
They need to be. They need to be 80 or 90 minutes each.
Yeah.
I don't expect 2 hours because I know they won't be that generous.
I would expect 2 hours for the series finale.
But, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes, like, for sure.
Give us 120
minutes.
But
give me 80 minutes, man. Give me 80 minutes.
I'm with you, and I think we'll get that at some point in the next like 6 months or so, probably, that minute count.
Maybe
if
so.
If I had to guess. So, yeah. Next call.
Hey, what up? It's Christina from Connecticut, and I want to tell you guys suck, because I love you guys, but put up the nice rewatch shirt. Like, seriously, I've written like 8 reviews. It's not happening. We're not going to get to 1,000. I just want to buy your shirt. Or should just shove my money up my fucking ass because it takes forever. But, like, I love you guys. I want to support you. Let me love you. Why won't you let me love you? Anyways, keep it up. Love you guys. Put up the shirt already so you can buy it. Please. Please. Okay, bye.
All right, look. We'll make a compromise. We're at 738 customer reviews on iTunes, right? And, yeah, 1,000 is a jump. We probably won't get there until season 8.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, look. Get us to 800, and we'll put out the fucking shirt, okay? Barrett has the means to access designers at Grand X to get the shirt designed and made up real nice. Get us to 800, and we'll give you the shirt. Does that seem reasonable?
Sure, sure.
I mean, that's only 62 more. It's
right.
Not a lot.
Maybe I can pull some strings, and we can release it at 750 or something. No promises, though.
Okay. We'll work on it.
We're working on the shirt. We'll get it. We'll get it soon.
Yeah. Next call.
Tommen and Pycelle sexy.
What? Is he just saying Tommen and Pycelle sexy?
Yeah. Tommen's dead, bro.
There is no Tommen and Pycelle sex scene. I googled it because I was so confused by this call. I have no idea what he's talking about.
It sounds like he's rooting for a Tommen and Pycelle sex scene.
I just badly needed to play this so that everyone else could have had to heard it.
They're both dead.
Well, I don't know if he's inferring. I thought maybe he was inferring to something like a deleted scene from season 6 or some shit. Maybe I have no idea what the hell he's talking about. I just needed that mental picture.
A lot of weirdos out there.
Tommen and Pycelle. In engaging in sexual intercourse, I needed to not be the only one who had that in their head.
No.
And now I'm not. So, I mean, I apologize for having to do that to everybody, but I had to do what I had to do, you know? It is what it is. Next call.
Yo, what's up, Clan Fam? This is JB from Alabama. I'm going to keep it short and sweet. This is about my favorite character, Tanner Lannister. I just want to ask you guys, if he did get his shit together and happened to get on screen for season 8, who would play him? I'm thinking that Zac Efron would be a good candidate. Big fan of effing around, by the way. If you guys could comment on this, maybe give some alternative actors that you think would better play the role, it'd be great to hear from you. Thanks. See you guys.
What a call. What a question.
Shouts to all the effers out there. Effers and effies.
So, as we know, Tanner Lannister, the long-lost Lannister, probably the most famous Lannister, who's been off at boarding school and rehab. He's just the ultimate, you know, black sheep of the family. Just a real fuck-up. It is an interesting theory that perhaps he could make an appearance in Season 8, and I do like the option of Efron to play him. You need somebody who looks young but also hot and troublesome?
People have been speculating about a Tanner Lannister cameo in Season 8. It would be a real game changer. Okay, I got one. I got one for you. I'm going to stick with the show's tradition of casting British actors. And I'm saying my ideal Tanner Lannister would be Tom Felton. That is the guy that played Draco Malfoy in the Harry Potter
films. Oh shit, that's good. I don't think that can be topped. I really don't.
I think that's your Tanner Lannister right there. He's got the blonde hair.
Yeah.
He's got the fuck up attitude.
The face.
The rich boy swag.
The punchable face.
The punchable face.
That's perfect. That's flawless. There you go.
So look out for that in Season 8. Tom Felton coming in as Tanner Lannister. HBO, give me a call. We can talk it out.
Work it out. Next call.
What's up, Clam Fam? This is Tyler from Connecticut. Got a quick Clam Fam correction for you guys. We're talking about where Danny and Grey Worm and the squad end up in the slave cities. It's actually Marine. All of the slave cities have that harpy winged dude on top of their cities because it's like the sign of the harpy that comes up in later seasons, but it is actually Marine where they post up for a while. But they do spend a good amount of time in Yunkai. But it is Marine that ends up being the base for a decent amount of seasons. But yeah, thanks guys. Love the pod. Keep it up. Peace out.
That is correct.
We choked on that one.
Yeah, I can't believe that I didn't remember that.
It's disappointing. I'm disappointed in you and me. but you a little more than me, but yeah, I'm disappointed in both of us. No, I mean, I even said, like, unless there's one other city that they go to, I can't quite remember. And then I like reeled back and went all in on you with you on
Yunkai. And Yunkai just doesn't even sound right.
No,
of course it's Marine.
It's Marine. And to our credit, the harpy thing fucking confused us.
Yeah, it threw me.
I didn't know. I did not know that was a thing that was on all the slave cities. And I appreciate the knowledge and the correction.
You learn something new every day.
So yeah, that's, you know, Marine is where they end up chilling for an extended period of time. That's exactly what we were thinking of. Thank you. Next call.
Hey, Barrett. Hey, Ross. This is Jacob from Laramie, Wyoming. And I wanted to respond to what you guys said. Our national anthem is based off of a British song. It's actually not our national anthem. It is My Country, 'Tis of Thee. The same melody is used for the United Kingdom's national anthem, God Save the Queen. Just a little American knowledge for you guys. Love the pod. Have a good one.
That's what it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the University of Texas fight song is based on the song I've Been Working on the Railroad.
Is it really?
Yeah.
It's not that they just have the same melody. It's like literally they ripped that melody from I've Been Working on the Railroad.
They just took the melody of I've Been Working on the Railroad. I believe this is a common thing for fight songs, though. I believe they take like
they
old
take
classic
melody?
Melodies like that and just repurpose
That's
them.
Good. Our nation's institutions of higher learning can't even come up with their own melodies. We just rip them from old,
you know, you know what they
songs.
Say, you know what they say, good artists create, great artists steal.
It's close to something like that. We're gonna get a fucking correction call on what the actual quote is. Don't call us with the actual quote. We can just Google it, but yeah, no, that's
what it is. Yeah,
okay,
it's something like that.
All right, next call.
Hey, this is Michael Haas from Houston. I'm calling in. I'm a bit late to the party, but a couple episodes ago, Lady Olenna and Tywin were talking about the sins of their children and whatnot, and they're talking about Loras playing for the other team. And they referred to, Lady Olenna referred to a good bit of buggery. And I realize that's not a word that many Americans are, privy to, and I just wanted to go ahead and educate everybody that buggery means butt sex. So, like, to bugger someone is to fuck them in the ass. And so when Lady Olenna was asking Lord Tywin if he ever participated in a good bit of buggery, she was asking if Lord Tywin had ever, had sex with any of his fellow soldiers or anything. And just thought I'd drop a bit of knowledge on the rest of the Clam Fam. you know. I hope this is insightful to everybody. Well, have a good one. Shout out to the Western Clam fam and have a great weekend, buddy.
Did he say he was calling from Texas?
From Houston.
But he's British?
I don't know. That's the thing he didn't clarify.
A lot of Brits in Houston.
He's got an accent. There's a lot of everything in Houston.
Was that a fake accent?
It crossed my mind that it could be.
Fake British accent?
But surely nobody would try to fool us with that kind of buffoonery.
I would try to fool you with that type of buffoonery, though.
It just upsets me because I like when we have listeners from all over.
He's probably a British guy in Houston. There's lots of them.
I hope
down there.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
But I thank you for the clarification and the knowledge on buggery.
A wee bit of slang.
It's nice to be taught something vulgar from someone in a British accent because it sounds better that way, you know?
Mm,
like a British
mm-hmm.
guy talking about fucking somebody in the ass is a lot less vulgar than me saying it. It just doesn't sound as crass.
Well, it's classier.
Classier. It's not as crass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next call.
Hey, guys. It's your girl, Sierra from Austin. Just calling with like a tiny correction. I forget who said it initially, but whoever said that the boat that Sansa was crying about leaving at the end of the Clan episode was Littlefinger's is correct. It's very clearly Littlefinger's. If you look at the boat's banner on the sail, it's like the fucking Mockingbird sigil that Littlefinger made. So she was definitely crying about Littlefinger leaving because she just received word from Tyrion that she had to marry Tyrion and not Loras. So she's like, oh, I fucked up. Should have just sent us Littlefinger. Cry. And yeah. Okay. Love y'all. Bye.
Thanks, Sierra. Yeah, I confused this a little bit. I thought perhaps Loras was leaving and she was crying like, oh, I don't get to marry him anymore. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't make any sense because
right.
he had to stay there to marry
yeah.
Cersei.
Yeah.
So yeah, she explained it.
It's Littlefinger.
Flawlessly. Not sure how I messed that up, but I did. Next call.
Shouts to the Lisa Mattresses on Littlefinger's boat that he's got there.
Yeah. As always, you can go to lisa.com/dragon. Save a bunch of money on a new mattress. Do it to it.
Dragon.
Hey, this is Carter from Raleigh calling again, and I just finished listening to The Climb, episode 6 or 7. And y'all were talking about how you thought how Jojen was saying that the visions take their toll and how Bran hasn't had the visions take their toll on him yet. But the kid had to go crippled in order to get access to these visions. So I'd say that's a pretty significant toll, just a personal opinion. I don't know if y'all see it in the same sense, but let me know your thoughts. Love the pod. Keep it up.
The thing for me is that she's implying that having the visions, physically having them, takes a physical toll on him, and
yes.
As we see, like
yes.
him having the vision causes this seizure type of situation. So I don't really look at those two things the same way. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
I think Bran becoming a cripple certainly plays into his destiny and has everything to do with his, you know, where he ends up. But I don't think that's necessarily the same type of deal.
I maintain that Bran doesn't have as many physical ailments because he was destined to do this.
Right.
Now, having said that, they obviously do take their toll on the three-eyed raven as well. The last three-eyed raven became a freaking tree.
Yeah, he was a tree person.
And Bran has obviously lost a lot of himself. So, in ways, the visions and the job itself, they're taking a toll on Bran as well.
To you know, piggyback off of that, we were talking about how, you know, Bran doesn't have any affliction like this where he's having seizures or anything, but you made a perfect point. He does. He's lost big chunks of his personality.
Right, right.
They definitely have taken their toll on him, which we didn't really acknowledge, so I'll classify that as a correction. I mean, for sure, having the powers that he has greatly influenced him. We joked every episode of season 7 about how ridiculously robotic and computerized
right.
he is, so...
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Next
a lot of good memes out there.
Oh, yeah. Great memes. Great memes. He watches you sleep. You look beautiful.
Ross. Alec here from California with a Clam Fam correction. I think I've let it go about 100 fucking times, but the climb was the last straw. You misuse the word infer every fucking time. The show cannot infer anything to the viewer. The show makes implications and the viewer is supposed to infer what those implications mean. An inference is a reaction to an implication. Don't do it again.
Yeah, I won't do it again. That's my bad. So the show implies things, not infers them. We infer. I infer based on their implications.
Fewer.
Fewer. No, I mean, there are some words that I'm going to fuck up, and I appreciate it that you call in a correct, because there's nothing worse than like listening to somebody misuse a word over and over and over. Thank you for calling in and correcting me. Implied. Implication.
Yeah.
I'll drill it into my head.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. We welcome those. Ross and I are in a group chat when any member of this particular group chat accidentally uses the wrong there, we immediately correct ourselves before anybody can jump on us with for using the wrong there.
Yeah, it's
like
very important.
Like we try to be grammatically correct as often as possible.
I would say out of everyone I know, you probably, you know, make the best effort to have a good vocabulary, to use a lot of different words, and that's always been helpful to me in learning new words and shit, and I'm supposed to be good at that type of stuff, so yeah. You know, my bad.
Help me help you.
There's one other one, too. Like, if you listen to the show and you catch another one, there's one other one. Every time I say it, I know I'm wrong and I'm using a word incorrectly. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, but I'm always just like, fuck it. So if you ever hear me using the wrong word, please call in and correct me. Next call.
Hey, guys. This is Steve from Minnesota. I'm listening to your podcast at the moment, and you said something about Lord of Light being an insane religion as Thoreau's tried to convert Robert Baratheon. I just wanted to ask what your opinion was on how do we not think that the Lord of Light is a real thing? We've seen people get risen from the dead. We've seen demons kill other people, and it just seems like instead of thinking of it as a religion, like this thing is real, and what's going to happen next with the Lord of Light's plan, whether it has to do with Azor Ahai or just the ending of the show in general. Love what you guys are doing. Keep it up. Also, super sad Veronica is still on the voicemail for this hotline. Just wanted to say that. All right, guys. Thanks. Bye.
We have gotten a new hotline voicemail up since this call came in. This was like 13 days ago that this actual voicemail came through, just for the record. But also, yeah, no, it crossed my mind when I said that, when I called it like an insane religion. I guess I meant like it's pretty intense.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of intense shit that goes into it, and that... I'm aware that there's a large contingency of people who consider this whole Lord of Light, Azor Ahai thing to be like the backbone of the story and are very invested in like who's going to be this, because there's Lightbringer, the sword, and this whole big theory that goes behind all this shit. So I'm with you, but here's my thought. Everything we see, and we've discussed this a little bit recently on like one of the, maybe this most recent episode this week, Second Sons or whatever, like the stuff that Melisandre does, just because she's able to pull off certain things, bring John back to life, birth a demon baby, doesn't necessarily mean that that religion is real or correct or that that God is real.
Yeah, exactly. What I would say is that, it's certainly crossed my mind in watching the show and reading about deep dives.
Like, damn, is this going to be the real deal?
Like maybe the Red God, maybe the Lord of Light, maybe this religion, like, is the one. Maybe it is. And you know, but at the same time, I feel like most of our evidence here is based off of things that Melisandre does.
Yeah.
And she's basically like a black magic witch. You know, she comes from Ahsai, where all sorts of weird shit goes down.
Right.
And the other thing is, like, we're in a more magical world here. There's green seers and wargs.
And dragons.
And, I mean, what about the old gods? We got weirwood trees that cry blood out of their eyes. Like, you know, like, there's a lot of different things that happen that make it clear that, like, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? The supernatural type things can certainly occur.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, that your point about there being all these different religions, the old gods, the new gods, the red god, just because we're only getting a big dose of one of them with the storyline, the way that it unfolds with Melisandre, I'm sure there is equal parts things going on that people can attribute to the old gods or the new gods or whatever as well. And I mean, the trees weeping blood, pretty good example. How do you explain that shit?
Right. Right.
So yeah, I'm still not sold on this. On it would shock me if the whole package of Game of Thrones and this whole story was wrapped up into a religious thing.
Yes. Yeah.
I think it's more to reflect the real world that we live in, where people live their lives based on different religions, and the meaning that they derive from those religions is different from person to person, and you can attribute different things to different religions if you want to, but it doesn't necessarily make it real.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
yeah, I would almost, you know, wager a stronger guess that, like, it's pun intended, I guess, but even more of a red herring. The whole Lord of Light.
Well, for sure. And I mean, look at what happened with Stannis. I stopped giving a shit about that whole theory with Lightbringer and Azor Ahai and all that crap, Azor Ahai, however you say it, the second that whole thing finally fell apart entirely.
Where she was just completely wrong about it.
Yeah, because if you're going to credit her with all this other stuff, like bringing Jon back from the dead as an example of maybe this is real, well, then you also have to look at it as like, well, what happened with Stannis? She was way off on that one.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I mean, I get where people are coming from that are all in on that,
yep,
but I'm
sure,
not.
For sure, for sure.
Next call.
Hey, Clam Fam, it's Andrew out of Austin. Barrett, it was great meeting you at Saved by the Brunch. Rosh, wish you were there. I'm just giving a quick call to answer y'all's question about Roz and Joffrey scene from episode 6. So Roz isn't in the books at all. There is a redheaded whore for the initial scene in season 1, but D&D expanded her role to give viewers a different perspective of things. She also filled in for a few other small characters here and there. It was actually a different whore that got shot, got beat up by Joffrey in that one scene a couple episodes ago. Also, another thing, there's no Chaos as a Ladder scene in the books. Varys and Littlefinger aren't POV characters, so they have no chapters with just the two of them alone giving dialogue. The books only have POV perspectives, so if his characters aren't POV characters and they're by themselves, you have no... you have no idea what's going on with them. So all that good stuff between those two is strictly show made. Love the pod and all y'all are doing. Later.
So to address, thank you. That was great.
Yeah, great call. Solid call.
Very informative.
Glad you got to make it out to Saved by the Brunch, man. We had a good time.
I'm sorry I couldn't be there. Where was I? Was that a town?
In Aspen.
Oh, yeah, I was in Aspen.
A little place called Aspen.
Where the beer flows like wine and women, beautiful women instinctively flock like the salmon of Capistrano.
Mmm, California, beautiful.
Oh, pop culture. Anyway, so yeah, if you haven't read the books, which I have, but it doesn't help because my memory is shit. They are set up where each chapter is named after one of the main characters.
Yeah.
So these POV characters he's referring to would be like Ned Stark, Arya, Sansa, and so on and so on. I'm not going to do a good enough job to remember all of the POV characters, but there's like Theon and such.
Jon, Daenerys,
yeah. So guys like Littlefinger and Varys, there's never a chapter titled Littlefinger or Varys.
Right.
So you don't get those POV moments like we did right there in the show. It's one of the best things about the show.
Yeah, I would absolutely. I didn't quite... I knew I've read some of the books, or some of one book, I should say, to be perfectly honest. So I knew that the chapters are written like only from certain POV characters, but yeah, I mean, I hadn't really thought about that. That like that means that the whole Chaos is a Ladder speech is completely created post books and within the show.
Right.
So I mean, God, fantastic. We need to look back at who actually wrote that episode. I think it was D&D.
Yeah.
I think it was Benioff and Weiss that wrote that one. But I mean, because God, what a marvelous scene and just a fantastic speech.
Yeah, just something great to keep in mind. So that, I mean, we get so many great, you know, lines and scenes between Varys and Littlefinger. Those are all show written, which is just tells you how good the show is.
Yeah, nice to see them operating in the shadows.
Oh, yeah.
And then let's see. Okay, Roz also is kind of a fill in for a few characters from the books, not actually in the books, though.
Which is very cool, and it's something that the show has been known to do, to wrap up several characters into one for the sake of not having to introduce all these
right.
other... Because the If you watch the show, and everyone who watches the show at one point has had the thought, holy shit, there are a lot of characters to keep up with here. There are even more in the books, and it's just literally impossible for them to insert them all into the show. So they have to use devices like Roz that they create to accomplish all the things they need to accomplish. And that's another spot where you got to give them a lot of credit. Like,
for sure.
Roz is a great character, and at no point along the way, as a show watcher, are you like, well, this is stupid, or like, she's clearly just here to plug holes. Like, you never have that feeling. So, great job by them. Next call.
Hey, this is Zach from Indy. I got a couple questions from Season 3, Episode 6. First of which, how fucking dumb is Theon? Like, I don't expect him to guess that it's exactly Ramsay, but, I mean, did he not take the same Sigil 101 class as the rest of the Starks? He's literally hanging like the flayed man on their flags. I mean, he should at least be able to guess that he's being captured by Bolton, man. I don't know. Maybe it's the traumatization of just being tortured and shit. His mind was all out of whack, but he's still dumb. Second thing is when Sansa and, the Tyrell guy, Loras, when they're talking and Loras says something about his French sleeves, is that the first time they've mentioned, like, described something in our nationality, like France, or not our nationality, but, like, France, and not, like, Bravosi or Dornish or something? I've never heard it. I don't know why that stuck out to me, but just thought it was interesting and whatnot. Let me know what you think. Peace.
This is the kind of shit that, this is why it's so good to be a member of the Clam Fam, because to start with this first point, I never put that together, like, that Theon is an idiot for not... It's so very clearly...
He's being flayed on a big X.
He is personifying their freaking symbol.
Yeah.
And he never... I mean, with the amount of episodes and time that he had to put that together, like, at some point you would have thought hanging there, he'd be like, wait a minute, and at least get the family. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, like the caller mentioned, yes, he is under a great deal of duress and being, you know, traumatized left and right, but yeah, you'd think that sitting up there on that X, he would have a light bulb moment.
Well, I mean, maybe the realizes, light bulb moment should be when he's physically being flayed.
He
he is the flayed man himself. Yeah, and then as far as the fringe sleeves comment from Loras goes, I never triggered anything in my mind, and I went and Googled it.
That has to be an accident.
After screening this call, I Googled it, and there's all these different like forums complaining and bitching about how Loras refers to these French sleeves because France is not a place that exists.
Yes.
So how the fuck would they be French?
That is a great call out. Obviously one that just kind of blew right by us. But yeah, because France does not exist in this world, and... I bet that was an accident. That's an oversight on the part of the show for sure.
Good call. Next.
Surprised GRRM didn't catch that though.
For sure. Like you would think. Yeah, I mean, there's so much to keep up with though. Whatever.
Ross, dude, you gotta stop calling him Ruse Bolton. Like it's R-U-S-E. It's a Ruse. Ruse like goose. Thanks. Bye.
All right, this is another one for me. Ruse like goose. Like goose.
Roost the goose.
All right, I got it. I don't know why. To be quite honest, it's not just a problem with Roost. It's me. every S to me is a Z. I don't know if you've ever noticed that, but it's just the way I talk. Mm. It's something wrong with me. I'm not really sorry about it. It's, you know, it's what makes me me. But thanks for the call. I'll work on it. Roost the goose.
Hi, so I'm calling in with a Tormund super fun fact / theory. I was listening to you guys' podcast while you were talking about how Tormund climbed the wall like 50 times and why the heck would he possibly do that. Well, the theory is, you know how he always tells that story about how he fucked a bear? And that's the whole thing about like in the story, he like had sex with a female bear. Well, the theory is that he's actually, in kind of like a sneaky way, talking about how he had sex with Mage Mormont. You know, the Sigil of House Mormont is a bear. So the theory is that he is actually badass Lyanna Mormont from the later seasons. He's actually maybe her dad. And you can totally look up the Wikipedia article by yourself, but it's like a weird theory that actually has some juice behind it. So just thought I would share. Bye, everybody.
Okay, so when we've addressed this before.
We've talked about the bear, that it could be a Mormont female.
Which, and then we said even like maybe that would make, possibly he could be Lyanna Mormont's father. And we were like, no, this is a ridiculous stretch.
Yes.
I'll say this. I had never considered, now that we're going back through and doing the Night's Rewatch, this whole thing about how he's climbed the wall so many times. I had never plugged that into the equation. And it still doesn't quite sit with me because, come on, that'd be one hell of a love affair to every time you want to see her, you have to go climb the wall and get over, you know what I mean? Like, and then get over to Bear Island or wherever. But
yeah, yeah.
That seems like a stretch, but I will give you that. It adds a little more juice to that theory, and I know there's a lot of people who are all in on that, but I don't know, man. That's...
I get the tie, for sure. Totally could be referring to a Mormon as the bear, but what does it do to have Lyanna be his daughter? Nothing.
We've got enough family secrecy shit going on.
Who cares?
We don't need another character whose parentage is in question. Think about it.
Oh, this person's parent. Like, come on.
That'd be overkill.
Yes.
Yeah. But I appreciate the theory anyway. Honestly, this is one of those shows where I almost enjoy the theories that I know are bullshit more than the ones that might be real, because the ones that might be real scare the hell out of me.
Right, right.
So I love shit like that.
That's true.
Yeah. Next call.
Hey guys, it's Nicole from California, longtime listener, first time caller. I'm a huge fan of the show and what you guys do. My best friend Kelly and I even have a dance routine we do whenever we hear the Oysters, Clams, and Cockles theme song. So there's that. So here's my beef. I've left a rating, I've left a 5-star review, and still no shirts. Where are the Night's Rewatch shirts? I don't want to have to invoke Sumai, but you know what? I'm invoking Sumai. Thanks, guys. Give us the shirts. Bye.
Can I just say the ladies of the Clam Fam really showed up on the hotline recently? We got a ton of female calls, and that's great. We want, you know, obviously as much diversity as possible. And I never imagined in my life that we would have a podcast theme song that someone develops a dance routine to. So that's very pleasing to know. This pleases me. And we've already discussed the shirt thing. This just double reinforces it.
That we need the shirts. We got to get the shirts.
Look,
okay. All right.
738. Get us to 800. We'll give you your shirts. It's that easy. Next call.
What's up, Clam Fam? This is Nick from San Diego. Just wanted to comment on something you guys said. You had mentioned about how when Beric Dondarrion gets resurrected, he says, "And each time I get resurrected, I lose a piece of myself." And you guys were saying how that doesn't seem to be coming into effect with Jon Snow, how he seems to be totally fine. But what you guys have totally forgotten about is that he lost his hair. He had the best hair game in Game of Thrones, at least for the guys. It was a freaking mane. And what happened? They cut it, and it turned into a shitty man bun. I mean, if that's not losing something, I don't know what is. So, you know, RIP Jon Snow hair. That thing was magnificent. He lost it, so... Anyway, love what you guys are doing, and sorry that Veronica's gone.
Just to clarify, he didn't lose his hair. You're making it sound like the man went bald. He still very much has a full head of hair and a great hairline. But, yeah, the mane that we came to know Jon Snow for, where it's, you know, a full flowing head of hair that's not being messed with
sure.
ties or anything
right.
like that.
Right.
We did lose that in season 7 where he's got it pulled back. I don't know what the reasoning for that is, if that's maybe a more appropriate look for the leadership role he takes on or what the situation is, but I certainly don't equate you know, the fact that he's been resurrected with losing his hairstyle. But I don't know. It's a funny angle. Thoughts?
R.I.P. Jon Snow hair. OG hair. The original hair. It was good.
All right, next call.
Hey, this is Dan from Chicago, day one Clan Fam member. So I was just sitting here listening to one of your podcasts, and I came to the realization that your outro music is a remix of the music from Winds of Winter when Cersei blows up the Sept. Can I get someone to confirm this for me, please? Because I'm really not 100% sure. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Where you been, bro? Where you been?
That is correct.
That is correct. Yeah, that's what it is. We got a badass who made it for us, and it's legit. Find me a better outro song on any podcast, not even Game of Thrones related. You can't. You can't. Next call.
Hey, Clam Fam. It's Rachel from Austin, Texas. So you guys said that Qyburn was hanging out at Harrenhal for whatever reason. He actually would technically be the maester there because the Lannisters were the last people to be holding Harrenhal, and they had tortured people and a lot of dead bodies, and he's a mad scientist. So just kind of fill in the blanks there. Yeah, I probably wouldn't be shocked if the Mountain knew Qyburn because they're both disgraced people in the underground part of King's Landing. I don't know. They know each other somehow. I'm sure that's how he ended up there. Yeah, so that's why he was in Harrenhal to begin with. Okay, love what you guys are doing. We miss you, Veronica, and thanks. Keep up the good work.
Okay, so I had never, like, the Qyburn finding him at Harrenhal during this rewatch was, like, surprising to me and you. I know we've talked about it a couple times. And then I never really fully pieced together how that whole thing unfolded, but I love this insight. It could be implicated. I could infer that Qyburn was the maester at Harrenhal, officially. A chain-wearing maester at Harrenhal, that he started taking part in all this shit with the Mountain, who's running Harrenhal and torturing people and doing fucked up things, and that's how he lost his chain, because the Citadel found out about that, perhaps?
I feel like he lost it at the Citadel. I feel like he was booted from the Citadel.
Like it was up there when that happened?
Yeah, but, I mean, sure.
Well, at the very least,
he could have been doing some experimental stuff at Harrenhal.
For sure. Yeah. And this explains how Qyburn and the Mountain know each other probably more intimately than we recognize.
Maybe so.
The Mountain was running Harrenhal. Qyburn is at Harrenhal.
Yeah.
They're probably taking part in some messed up shit together. And then that gives Qyburn all the more reason to resurrect this guy later on when he's dead.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Next call.
Sup, Clam Fam. This is Brian. Quick question. Would you rather have the power of Beric Dondarrion to be brought back to life? Or would you rather know what Podrick did to those hookers and then be able to utilize that yourself in the real world? Love the pod. Interesting question.
Let me just say this. Technically, not Beric Dondarrion's power. It's the Lord of Light that's bringing him back. Or, if anything, it's Thoros.
It's Thoros.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, Thoros is power. But...
So what I'd rather have, like, a main boy by my side...
Who could bring you back to life over and over.
Should anything go disastrously wrong.
Or be able to please prostitutes at a Podrick level that gets you free prostitute ass, basically.
Hmm.
That's a toughie. It's an easy one for me because I'm married. So I have to say... I'd rather be Beric and have my boy who could bring me back to life over and over.
I don't know if that's the right answer for a married person. What if you're basically turning down just like the ultimate satisfaction every time for your wife though, aren't you?
So that power could be used on my wife. I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't look at it that way.
It's just his sexual prowess here, right? You know?
Okay.
You can use it however you see fit to get free sex from hookers or to please any woman that you so choose.
I think I have to go with the Podrick power then because, I mean, look, the odds of me getting offed just aren't as good as they are for Beric. You know what I mean? Like,
Right.
I don't live in Westeros. I'm not running around with the Brotherhood Without Banners and fighting people all the time. So I'm feeling pretty confident in my ability to stay alive at least until like 60 and after that, fuck it. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Sex God Pod's
Yeah, I'm gonna say the same now. Here's why. Because one, this would be a great power to have, and just imagine what it does for your confidence. And two, it would be just my luck that when I did accidentally die, my Thoros would be nowhere to be found.
he'd be off doing something. I would be by myself, and then I wouldn't be able to get resurrected anyway. So, you know, it's just like, it's very, you got to be in a situation where you're always riding with your boy here.
But it's, okay, but look at it this way. When Jon Snow gets got, he's out for a while before Melisandre shows up and brings him back to life.
That's true. That's true.
We don't know exactly how long, if he was on that table for a week or, you know, a couple hours or a few days or whatever. But so I don't know about that. I don't know if that, let me just shit all over what you said, you know?
Okay. Still, I think I stick with my original answer to be super good at the sex.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Hey, Ross. It's pronounced egret, not egret. No regret.
Egret.
I like that he ended the call with a rhyme. No regrets. Yeah, no, I know. If you remember, when a couple episodes ago I said that I'm going to start saying it correctly, egret, instead of doing the egret that I was doing. This is the call that finally broke me. We just didn't play it yet. I saved it up for the episode that we're doing now. Because I felt great shame wash over me when I listened to this man.
He's still stomping on you, though, for saying egret instead of egret.
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 Not egret. Fuck. There's just so many words to have to know and say correctly. It's just tough,
it's
man.
It is. I still can't say Missandei.
Egret. Egret. Infer. All right. All right. Nice call.
Ruse.
Ruse.
Hi, my name is Doris. I'm calling from Mexico. Love the show. Listen, there's so many things wrong. However, this one, the reason Qyburn is in Cersei's good graces is because he saved Jaime's hand or Jaime's arm, because anyone else would have amputated his whole arm. Qyburn saved the arm, and when Cersei fell out with the long beard guy, whose name escapes me, her maester, she moved Qyburn into that position. Otherwise, keep on keeping on, people. Bye.
First of all, shout out to Mexico and all our Mexican listeners.
We've gone international.
South of the border. We appreciate you. We love you. Vamos a la clam fam. But.
Viva la clam fam.
Whatever. What the hell, lady? You don't start your call off by saying, there are so many things wrong, but I'm just going to pick one. Also, clam fam correction or your clam fam correction, it's Picel. What, you can't remember Picel's name? I can't even say English words correctly, and I can remember Picel's name. That was just unnecessarily harsh.
Now I'm just wondering what her, I'd like to see her laundry list here of like all the things that were getting wrong that she's just, I can just see her like sitting in her car listening to our podcast like, no, God damn it. Just like so frustrated with her, with us. Yeah. And I apologize, but you know.
What was the thing she pointed out? Oh, why Picel's in Cersei's good graces because he saves James.
No, Qyburn.
I meant Qyburn, sorry, yeah. Yeah,
I don't know who she was talking about. She said somebody with the long hair that she couldn't remember her
That's
name.
That's Picel she's referring to with the beard.
Oh, okay.
That was Cersei's maester.
Oh, right, okay.
Prior. Yeah.
But, okay, yes, but now Qyburn is he's part of the fam because he was the one that saved, that maintained Jaime's...
Yes, and that,
stub.
Again, that is correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, did we say something different?
I don't know. I just assume so because there's so many things and that's the one she picked.
Well,
that she could correct us on.
You know, call back and just give us the list. Come on.
And speak a little Spanish for us. just for funsies. Come on. Call us Poppy. No? All right.
That's offensive.
Okay. Next call.
Hey, Clam Fam. This is Moose, first-time caller, regular Twitter interactor. Calling in with a Clam Fam clarification. Sam is on that trip strictly to tend to the Ravens. All he's there to do is write that letter, like Barrett said, in case shit goes down, so that like they at least at King's or at the castle know what is going on. And so he kind of dicks that up. He's there because Maester Aemon obviously can't make that trip. My second one is about Ghost. Basically, the last time we saw Ghost, right, was when John and Corrin are having their first little tete-a-tete, and Ghost is wandering off, and John is all, Ghost, to me. And then Corrin Halfhand is all, you can't tame a wild thing. And then Ghost just fucks off right there.
And basically him coming back in this scene to save Sam is Ghost fucking back on, presumably to get away from the wall of Army of the Dead that are on their way. Anyway, that's all. Love you. Bye.
Love you too. Yeah, so I never really, I mean, we talked a little bit about the scene he's referring to is where Sam is finally saved at the beginning of this season by Mormont and the rest of the surviving brothers of the Night's Watch.
Does Mormont tell him you had one job?
Yes.
Is that where the you had one job comes from?
No, I don't think so. It just happens to be the line in the episode. But
that's like a meme at this point.
Sort of,
you had one job.
It's just a running joke, I feel like, throughout. There's multiple points in pop culture that I'm sure it's been used. Yeah, but yeah, you had one job is a funny thing to yell at people when they mess something up.
Right.
But Sam, I like it's good to have the explanation. Maester Aemon cannot make this trip because he's old as shit. He can't see anything. He's obviously not going to go trekking north on the other side of the wall looking for trouble. That's just not something this elderly man is going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So Sam, who is his steward or whatever, his ward or his little bitch, his pledge.
Intern.
He goes for him. And that's his whole reason for being there, is to maintain the ravens. Yep. And if some shit hits the fan, which they expect that shit will hit the fan at some point, that he's going to be the one to fire off a raven to let Castle Black at the very least or any other people that need to know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't do that, and that makes sense as why, you know, Mormont scolds him the way that he does. Also, love the impressions.
Yeah, thank you for
inserting those in there.
Inserting those,
lovely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And great point on Ghost, because Ghost kind of comes out of nowhere in that same episode to save Sam from that white that he encounters. And that explanation does make sense to me. I'd totally forgotten that he kind of wanders off when John says to me and he ignores him.
Yeah.
Good call.
Hey, Clan fam, this is Zach from Atlanta. Wasn't going to say anything about it. Figured it was just a slip of the tongue. But y'all literally keep referring to Kingsguard as gold cloaks, which is so crazy. There are two completely separate things, and the guys with Cersei are definitely Kingsguard. Cersei Lannister is not going to walk around with fucking gold cloaks, City Watch, fucking scum peasants, eating bowls of brown and flea bottom. They don't even wear gold cloaks. They wear white cloaks. There's only fucking seven of them, and there's thousands of City Watch. They are white cloaks, not gold cloaks. All right, bye.
Thank you for the clarification. Did we get a call from Tyler in this episode? Like, was there a single Tyler representing here? I'm upset.
I don't know.
I don't think there was.
Was that not a Tyler that
it
just
wasn't.
Called?
No,
okay.
Where you at, Tyler's?
That is just wild. Not a single Tyler call got through?
We're the number one Tyler podcast in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, for some reason, not a single one.
Man.
Huh.
Tyler's really dropped the ball on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. I'll have to pay more attention to what exactly we're saying. I think we just throw those words around when we're talking about people that are either defending Cersei or Joffrey or somebody else.
I've always used them synonymously, and that's obviously very incorrect.
Right, right. Well, I feel like you know, caller says that, and I'm like, well, yeah, gold cloaks are the City Watch, and then Kingsguard is the Kingsguard.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's the whole Janice Slint, Meryn Trant thing again. Like, they
look the fucking
just, they're
same.
They're just confusing in the show.
It's big dudes
which is which.
In big armor.
Right.
With
yeah.
cloaks or capes
so
of
it's,
some
so
kind.
So it's a little confusing. But yeah, we'll try to get the
the
wordage there.
No, that makes perfect sense, though. It's like they're not going to put Bronn in charge of a group of people who's also like seeing to the protection of the royal family. Mm-hmm. Like, Bronn's in charge of the gold cloaks, these bitch-ass City Watch people.
Well, and not anymore.
Or was, whatever, at that one point. And, the Kingsguard are the guys that Cersei has rolling with her.
Right.
The heavy hitters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next call.
What's up, Clam fam? This is Ethan Martin from Chicago. This is just an interesting musing. First off, excellent job on the podcast, guys. Really enjoying it, especially the Night's Rewatch. But just an interesting thought I've had. We oftentimes refer to Game of Thrones as though it's medieval times. Like, we'll be like, oh, I guess it's how they did it back then. Or, oh, I guess it's how they did it in medieval times. But I guess isn't it just a fantasy world that's based, like, in back in the day? It's not, like, real accurate medieval times. I find myself doing it all the time, and I hear you guys do it from time to time, too. But it just made me laugh because it's not really based on medieval times. It's really just a fantasy world, kind of like Lord of the Rings isn't based on medieval times either. So just a thought, thanks for all you guys do, and I appreciate everything. I'll keep listening. Thanks. Bye.
First off, thank you to all you guys and girls for the props, for listening and supporting us through the Knights rewatch on the way to season 8. Obviously, it's awesome, a ton of fun for me and Barrett, and to watch the Clam Fam grow week by week has been next level, you know, not redeeming, is that
rewarding?
The word? Rewarding. Yeah, thank you. For both of us. Thanks for everybody who's called the hotline, who participated in this episode, and who calls the hotline every week. Even if your call doesn't make the air, that doesn't necessarily mean that it wasn't a great call. If we already had another call talking about that same topic and we listened to it first, that's just the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. Regarding this particular call, yeah, it's so funny that we owe, like, it's kind of like when you're watching sports, your favorite sports team, and you say we.
Mm-hmm.
Like as if you're a member of the team and you're actually playing when you're absolutely not and you have nothing to do with the outcome of the game. But like when I'm watching the Rockets or talking about the Rockets, it's me. It's
right,
we.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
That's the same kind of way it is with Game of Thrones. Like when you're so emotionally invested in something, it becomes real to you even though it's not. So often we get calls or emails or tweets or whatever talking about how fucked we are because of the White Walkers. Like, this is not real at all. Like, we have no stake in this game at all. But it's the same thing with, like, because George R. R. Martin took so much inspiration from different historical events, and because we most associate knights and knighthood and this sword fighting type of shit and, you know, peasants and bowls of brown and that type of stuff with medieval times, that's the one we most easily associate it with. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, and I think, and I agree, like, this is not a fantasy world that is purposely set in medieval times. But that is the era from which it draws the most
inspiration
yeah. for its setting and its technology
kind of
and
the,
its... Yeah, and it's just like, and it's like world building type
socioeconomic
stuff.
Like layout is all kind of
right.
based on
like
that sort of feel.
Yeah, yeah, lowborn and highborn, and you know.
Now, granted, I have no idea technically what years the medieval times encompass, but that is the one I most associate with. So that's the one I'm going to compare it to. When
I don't think it's wrong to like to see something on the show and then be like, well. Maybe, you know, that's how it was in medieval times.
Right.
Because, like I said, I think that's the era to which it most closely resembles yeah. and relates.
And we're never going to stop doing that.
Yeah.
No. But great call. Thank you. That's it. That's it for the hotline calls. Again, we will be back Monday to talk about the 9th episode of season 3, the penultimate episode, The Reigns of Castamere. We all know what goes down there. It's written by Benioff and Weiss and directed by David Nutter, the Nutman.
Nutman at it again.
Oh, yeah, he's back. You can follow us on Instagram at Oysters Clams Cockles and on Twitter at Clams and Cockles. Like us on Facebook.com/OystersClamsCockles. You can follow me, Ross Bolin, on all my social media, Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, at WR Bolin. Barrett, where can you be followed?
You can find me on the social mediums at Barrett Dudley, Instagram, Twitter. Hit me up.
Again, we're at 738 customer reviews on iTunes as of this recording. Get us to 800, and we will get you that Knights Rewatch shirt. Check out grandxshop.com/OCC for all the existing Oysters, Clams, and Cockles shirts and Game of Thrones-themed t-shirts that we have pumped out. You can also support this podcast by checking out manoutfitters.com and invoking Sumai at checkout to get 15% off your entire order of over $150. And checking out rowdygentleman.com and invoking Sumai at checkout to save 10% on your entire order. Again, invoking Sumai at checkout means you type Sumai in to the promo code box to save money.
Sumai.
Yeah. Figure it out.
Sumai.
Thank you again to everybody who's called into the hotline. We really appreciate it. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting the Clam Fam. We love you guys. Check out the Ross Bolin podcast if you haven't already. I've got 3 new episodes dropping this week. If you're looking to get a better night's sleep, hit leesa.com/dragon, leesa.com/dragon. The best mattresses in the world and pillows and blankets and spring, the whatever, base for the bed. All they got everything you need. All right. We'll be back Monday. We love you. Appreciate you. Peace.
Bye.